You are listening to Fanthatrax.
Powered by Fanthatrax.com. It's the Fanta from down under.
All right, guys, welcome back to the one, the only Fanta from down under, live on Fanthatrax Radio, brought to you by, of course, the kind folks over there. And, of course, go and check out all the other shows on the platform. You're going to enjoy it, of course. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, and joining me from the other end of the globe, in that amazing place where they sound like Aussies too, and that is, of course, Boston, Massachusetts, the one, the only, Eric Onkenhout. Mate, how are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Thank you for having me. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing really well, actually. Nice bit of leave I'm taking from work, so I've got a couple of days free to... Yeah. Chill back, and I'm getting immersed in the wonderful, weird, but crazy world of David Lynch, the one-time director of Return of the Jedi at one stage there.
Almost.
Can you just imagine? He would have dragged Kyle MacLachlan into Star Wars. That would have been strange.
Yeah.
Weird enough as Paul Atreides, you know?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, yeah.
Certainly.
And, of course, the bad news, folks, that Dune has been put back to October 2021. Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. I saw that news the other day. I was like, that's a long time. I thought maybe April, you know, but almost just about another year.
But first of all, let us know what you've been up to, pal.
I'll just start like in the summertime, I guess, because there's really not much you can do anyway. I read a book, you know, J.W. Rinzler, right?
Oh, yeah.
The author of all those making of books, phenomenal. He wrote his first novel called All Up, which came out in July, I think. And the book is really, really good. I highly recommend it. It's about the first space race. And I couldn't put it down. Excellent book. So I read that. And yeah, I've just been reading a lot. I read two books by Carrie Fisher, Wishful Drinking and Princess Diarist.
Oh, they're good books, yeah.
And she just lets it all out. It's like, she doesn't hide anything.
Yeah, there's no frills. She lets people know what's going on. I mean, Postcards from the Edge, I think they made it a movie, if I remember right.
Yeah, I want to check that out. They did, but I haven't seen it yet. So after I read The Princess Diarist, I read Anthony Daniels' book, I Am C-3PO, which I just finished like a week or two ago.
It's a good book.
Great story. And going from Carrie Fisher to Anthony Daniels is like, you get these two books that are kind of like, nothing is held back. Then you get the like refined writing of Anthony Daniels. It's like, whoa, complete opposite. So that was cool. Good books.
They're good. I think 3PO, Anthony Daniels, he doesn't hold back too. There's something about, actually all of them are pretty much, you know, there's nothing that they hold sacred. They will say what they want to say. He's been no fan of certain actors. Let's just say there's been parts where he didn't get along with Kenny Baker. That's one thing.
And he mentions that in the book.
Yeah, and
spoilers.
I honestly think that, and I mean, I've heard Kenny Baker's side of it too. I've heard some fans, their thoughts on Anthony Daniels, but the majority of what I've seen, Anthony's nothing but a great entertainer, somebody who's there for the fans. I honestly think there's just been some misunderstanding between Kenny and him, and it's just grown exponentially because they probably haven't ironed it out, haven't chatted to each other about it. And half the time when he came back, Kenny was never in the suit. It was always an automatic droid, or, you know, basically a radio control one.
Yeah. Have you read the book? I don't want to like give it away.
Yeah, no, but... I have, yeah.
Okay, so he mentions that most of the time he was working next to just a robot. He was not in, Kenny Baker was not in the suit. So that's right.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I got like halfway through the book and I'm like, he has not mentioned Kenny Baker once yet. And I know they didn't get along, but that's crazy. And then you finally like, there was like maybe like two pages on their relationship and that was it. He just said, you know, things were said. You know, we were never close, and as time went along, it got worse. So,
I think half the thing is that they didn't work together, really. I mean, a lot of those shots with probably Kenny in the suit when he's moving the droid across and stuff like that. He was shaken. Would have been just a locked-off shot by himself. So that's probably half the thing is they worked together on the first one. Probably only a little bit here and there on the OT, but a lot of what Kenny did would have been as Ewoks and stuff like that. You know?
And now it's time for the news, live from Quinlan's Cantina on the Gold Coast of Australia, with the Phantom from Down Under.
Later.
Oh, yeah.
And I think other little roles that they had too. And I think that is what it comes down to, is that they obviously had a misunderstanding and it's sort of grown from there. And it's sad, but unfortunately, not everyone gets along at work, you know?
Right.
You know?
I mean, he had nothing but nice words for pretty much everybody else he came in contact with, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, just that one.
It's kind of weird, isn't it? Yeah. So, but yeah. I think too, that was a great book because he's, you know, he's also letting us know what happened after scenes were shot, you know, and when he and Mark would go into, I can't remember if it was with Alec Guinness or not, but they would go drinking in London, you know, and the British know how to drink. You can imagine having, you know, pints, not to put down American lager. American lager's great, don't get me wrong, I drink it too. But
it depends.
It depends, because you guys go into much more low-carb beer. It's always a light, you know, Bud Light, that sort of stuff.
Let me just say this. If you have a microbrew, they're pretty decent. But if you're going with like a Budweiser, forget it. It's just water.
It's just water, yeah. It's just different tastes. You guys, as a majority in most, do you call them bars over there or pubs?
Bars.
Bars. Okay, so you go to a bar, the majority of what's going to be behind the counter would be light strength, so light to mids. Out here in Australia, they're all heavies. Yeah. Majority are heavies. Yeah. Mids sometimes, depending on where it is. But in London, it's mainly heavies. Yeah, your Guinnesses, all that sort of stuff, your Mercury, all that.
Yeah.
But anyway, you can imagine Mark getting out there in his early 20s, and he's like, whoa, what just hit me? You know, it's the sledgehammer of that. But I will say this. This is the difference between American and Australian pubs and bars and that sort of social scene and the British. The British go out there to drown their sorrows. That's they had a hard day's work. The social thing was to go out, have a drink, and just try and forget about your hard day. Now, Aussies and Americans are the same because we go out to have fun.
Yeah.
That's unwind. The difference. Unwind. Yeah, totally. Totally. So it's kind of, you're still doing that. You're still going out after a hard day's work, but it's celebrating it. It's not dwelling on it. And I think that's the difference in the culture. When my stepdad's father was over there in the war, World War II, he said the same thing. The Canadians and the... he was a bomber navigator in one of the big Lancasters. And so they went over there. Yeah. So he went over there and he expected, you know, oh, God, you know, they'll be rowdy. And no, there was a lot of decorum. And going, you know, sit down with your drinks here at the pub, and it's a nice lamb meal with shanks and vegetables on the side. And you make sure they have those, you know, how they do in the royal family. You see it all the time, where they got the fork, they've got the spade, they've got the knife, that stuff. And so, you know, poor old Bordy, which is, you know, the step granddad, he's just like, the hell's going on over here? You know, we have a knife and fork in Australia, and that's it.
Yeah.
All these little things. And it was just interesting seeing that grow. And obviously it's completely different now. That was back in the 40s. But it just showed the difference. And then when some of those vets came out to Australia, the British, they're like, wow, you guys don't even do that. And he's like, no, we get out, we have some fun. And they all get into, you know, the jovial atmosphere. Same happens in the States in the bars over there.
Yeah. So, I love going out after work with friends and just going out, have a beer, and we might talk about work and kind of vent and stuff like that, but, you know, we have a good time.
It's great, you know. You go out to the bar in the car, out past the park.
Yeah. Have a couple of beers. Yeah.
I still can't get the Boston twang. I one day will, but it's what I really appreciate about the Boston lingo, whatever you want to call it. There's so much Australian, very Australian.
Great minds think alike, I suppose.
It's great, like the way we say it too, like, you know, let's get in the car down the park, mate. Let's go. It's just similar. I remember watching years ago a documentary where this guy was traveling up, was at the east side of the state. So he stopped at, I think it was Boston was as high as he went. And there was a guy out there who was doing river tours in a big speedboat. And took him out in the water, and he's like, now, righto, you got these out here in Australia, haven't you? And he's like, whoa, you're from Gold Coast or something? He goes, no, I'm from Boston. You know, but it was so bang on, very similar. And I think, you know, that's just amazing.
Because we're so far apart, distance-wise.
Yeah.
Wouldn't think that you'd sound alike.
It's crazy, eh? But and particularly if you go down to Canberra in Australia, which is our capital territory where we have our big city, Canberra. It's also got the ACT, Australian Capital Territory. It's even closer to Massachusetts Sound. So it's amazing.
I'm Gareth Edwards, and you're listening to Fanthatrax Radio.
Absolutely. We are here, folks, to celebrate the Carillion Smuggler. We're going to be looking at, you know, the life of Han Solo, merch, the books, the movies, where it goes from here, who knows, and, of course, the life of the smuggler himself. So, first question, straight up, where did you first encounter Han Solo?
I guess it was probably The Empire Strikes Back. I don't know. It's been so long. He's always been there.
Yeah, he's kind of the same, isn't it? Like, for me, it was, I think... Well, obviously, I've seen Star Wars, so I mean that's the big one. But I think I really got. I think it was, where was it? It was the TV. So I've seen it on TV a couple of times, and they were re-releasing it on video through. I remember CBS Taft, TAFT, okay. Whatever that was. It used to be Welcome to CBS Taft Home Video. You know, you had that little thing at the start. I do remember that. And anyway, so what they would do is they bring back. Releases here in Australia, and they put in these little black cassettes with Fox on the front, and it just had Star Wars logo, nothing else. And it was just like a video copy, I remember, like video shop copy, like our version of Blockbuster back then. And for folks out there that don't know, Blockbuster in Australia, we had our own Blockbuster out here in Australia in the 80s before Blockbuster became the big blue and yellow bannered business. So Blockbuster out here in Australia is run by some locals out here, but that's where I found that one for the first time. Anyway, but re-watches of that, that's how I got to really know Han Solo, and I'm thinking, Luke's who we're meant to be rooting for, but Han Solo's cooler.
Oh, yeah. Well, let me re-answer that question. So I just remember, I know he was in the first hours, or whatever, the fourth one, the original. But for me personally, like, I remember having, like, his action figure, like, the from the Hoth Battle Gear action figure. And I just remember him being, like, this kind of guy that was, like, he was cool and laid back. Like, he must be cool because he got Princess Leia, you know? And I'm like, and Luke was kind of a little dorky, you know?
Pretty much.
So I just kind of remember that. And I just remember, like, oh... What's going to happen to Han Solo? He's frozen in carbonite, you know? So that's like one of my earliest memories of Han Solo, I think.
I think the big one, too, for me was he was my second Kenner figure that I got.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty early for me. I don't remember exactly, but he was up there, probably like in my top 10 or 15.
I remember saying to, because this is one of the ones I first bought with pocket money. As a kid, I said, it's not realistic. I remember saying that. This is as a kid. Arms bend. They don't just go like this. He goes, kid, it's an action figure. I'm like, yeah, but aren't you guys meant to be like making it more real? Like this? And I remember saying that. I was only about, what if I was 3 or 4 years old? It was hilarious.
What do you mean this? Like his arm, bending his arm?
Yeah, because of the 5 points articulation, it can only swivel from the shoulder. Yeah. So like, but yet G.I. Joe had, whatever it was, 21 points of articulation or whatever it was.
Yeah, that always bugged me too, because I was a bigger Star Wars fan, but I liked the G.I. Joe action figures better because they could bend the elbows and the knees and stuff.
Although I think the whole silver joints in every little thing stuck out a little bit too much.
Sometimes.
But
the screws.
The screws. And I think the big thing was, too, is that they'd all stolen it from Mego. I think it was, Mego, I can't remember. But they were bringing out the Buck Rogers film figures from 79, 80, when that show was out. And, again, another one of those clones of Star Wars, you know, coming out in the wake. And that's one of the reasons I like Buck Rogers, because he was a bit like Han Solo. He was kind of like, I don't want to be here, but I've got to, you know, like...
Even his name, like Buck Rogers, is kind of like, kind of Cool Hand Luke, you know, kind of like, just a cool character.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's very, very chill.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think the other thing with the Han Solo was years after, so it would have been, God, just after Empire, about 82, 83, just before The Return came out, we had these boxes that would come out for Christmas out here in Australia. You'd have colouring in books. You'd have an adaptation, usually in just a very flimsy paperback. You'd also have the Star Wars magazine that was coming out, and it was called Blues Harvest, believe it or not. Was it Terror Beyond or Horror Beyond Imagination? Basically, yeah. it was a mag. It was a poster-sized mag, and it had all the stuff of the movie coming out. So it was basically the making of. And if I still had that today, that would be worth thousands. It'd be crazy.
Yeah.
And I had that, and then there was a series of these little colouring in books that used to come with it. And that box got lost when it moved from one house to another. And it's, it really pains me to say that that issue of Empire Strikes Back would have been worth lots of dollar.
Yeah, I had magazines back then too that I don't have anymore either, and I have no idea what happened to them. But I'm just like, I wish I had them still.
Same. It wasn't just Star Wars. There was also a large. These are UK editions. UK always did jumbo sized comics. They did them from 2000 AD and Judge Dredd, all that sort of run. And then when Marvel went to the UK. And they said, these look pretty good. What do you guys got on these on the shelf? And they would use the printing press from 2000 AD and all that, and they would print out massive, huge editions. So Marvel put out Battlestar Galactica, and I still have that here somewhere. I don't know where I put it, but it's a large format Battlestar Galactica. It's huge. It was basically poster size. And after that, they'd also start releasing others in that giant format. And Star Wars was one of them, but Batman... Hot on the heels of it over there, they started releasing the Ra's al Ghul run. And it's funny because I thought this was a really stupid character when I was a kid. I'm going, he's got funny little sideburns. I kind of like, this isn't a real Batman villain. What the hell? He doesn't have special powers and all. Anyway, years later, I literally used that to put breakfast on once, and it just got ruined. And it was a good and a good comic. Years later, find out when Batman Begins came around that, it's a real character, all right, and it's probably the best adversary Batman had. I'm like, no. And I trashed the original jump-size version and trashed it.
You never know, man.
You never know. You know, you got to keep your stuff.
You're listening to Fantatrax. Flip through the galaxy of literature with Cannon Fodder hosts Brian Cameron, Matt Booker, Mark Newbold, and Mark Mocaster.
Count me in.
Spin round the rim with Desert Planet Discs. Your musical journey through the space lanes with your hosts, Carl Bayless and Greg Robertson.
The hottest tunes this side of Mos Eisley.
Get the latest news, interviews, reviews, and much more on Making Tracks with your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Mulcaster.
Like an Ewok battle wagon out of control.
Join hosts Claire Henry and a rotating panel of guest hosts for the podcast that's full of hope.
Hope.
Planet Leia.
I love you.
I know.
It's time to head south with the Fantha from Down Under, Adam O'Brien.
Oh, g'day, mate. How you going?
Start your engines with Paul Naylor and Mark Newbold as they lift the hood on starships, airspeeders, swoops, capital ships, and more from across the cosmos. And for everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
But I think that's where my love of Han Solo comes from is that, you know, back in those days, I thought of him more as a superhero. You know, his superhero sensibilities were the fact that he didn't care. You know, fact that, you know, he's out for the dollar. He had to fix up the Falcon or whatever it was. But he was also us in that universe. He was an everyman. You know, he was the kind of guy who had to get the job done to feed the kids, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Very much. It's very much so. I think that's why he's probably the most relatable of any Star Wars character, is because he's just he's not good or bad. He's just like in the middle, and he's just trying to make a living, and he gets caught up in this war, and you know, he has to make a decision, I guess.
Yeah, you know? I think too with that is the fact that, you know, like my love for that character, particularly right through, and you could tell by Return of the Jedi, Harrison really wasn't into it. You know, he's kind of like, paycheck. You know, that's what he's there for. Even though he, you know, he's a professional, he'll still put what he can in. Particularly, I think Return of the Jedi, the scenes at the start of the film are really well done. But he didn't get on with Richard Marquand, you can tell. Like, he's just, no. He's there for the... And it, apparently even Carrie Fisher didn't get along with Marquand, but...
And neither did Anthony Daniels, let me tell you.
Yeah, that's right. But I think Mark had a more good rapport with him and stuff like that, mainly because he liked working with the Brits. Mark's, I think, a bit of an honorary Brit, you know, when it comes to...
I think he got along with everybody he met, basically. He's so laid back, you know, California guy.
Yeah, one endless summer, one crazy summer, Californian.
Yeah,
you know,
something like that.
But yeah, they're just very chill.
Corvette summer.
That's the one. Yeah. But yeah, and I think that's the difference is that Harry had been out there for so long. I mean, I was watching something. I think it was called Shiloh Falls, which is a western he did in the '60s, and he was already like 25 then. So he's an old hand, you know, when it comes to, by the time he was doing Blade Runner, he was 40 years old, you know, so he got famous late. He already had a family, all that sort of stuff. And I think a lot of that cynicism that comes with being around middle age, I mean, crikey, I'm there now myself, but, you know, that goes into the character and informed the character's perspective.
Makes sense, because he, acting was not his, not like that wasn't the direction he was going in. He was a carpenter, you know?
Yeah, that's right. So, like, who is it? It was Martin Scorsese and Francis Ford Coppola had hired him to do, like, you know, where it was.
Build a door.
And I think he was doing a deck. He was doing a deck for somebody else. It might have been Brian De Palma, but they're all friends, you know. It's like, yeah, you know, Harrison, we need you to do this. And he's like, all right, do this. You know, and, you know, as he does.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you're right. You know, it's going to cost you $2,000. You go off and do it. And there's something about that. Here's another thing that informed the character is the tradesman in him. Or as we call, here you go, a bit of Australian lingo for you, tradie.
Okay.
So the tradie in Han Solo comes from, of course, the man himself, Bennett Carpenter. You know, he was, you know, obviously doing deals because you wheel and deal when you do that stuff. You know, the pine's going to cost you, you know, $2,000. Yeah. I'll shave a bit off it. $1,800. And that's basically the same sort of deals he was doing right up to Force Awakens, before he turned into shish kebab. And I think that's the thing that, you know, you see in his character. Yeah. Put on a skill, mate. You know. But I love it, and I think that's, you know, part of what makes that character relatable. It's a relatable part, and it's something that really, you know, I'm back here. I'm here.
Okay.
But, you know, so, it informs the character, doesn't it?
Yeah. What I was going to say was in The Princess Diaries, Carrie Fisher's book, she talks a lot about her relationship with Harrison Ford. And she really, like, looked up to him like he was already, like, established when she was in the first Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like she was like in awe of him almost.
Yeah, I think maybe a little bit more than awe because they got it on.
Yeah,
and it's more than
once, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the thing is that Harry wanted to keep that on the quiet because I think he was married at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he got divorced like in 79.
Yeah.
I read. So.
And that son is actually in Blade Runner. The son from that marriage, I think his name's Ben Ford. Famous chef in Chicago, and he's just like his old man. He's got the same, what do you want, a hamburger, fries? He's got that in there, but he's a very well-to-do chef. I actually follow him on Instagram. Very, very talented. But he actually jumped in when they did the 2007 redo of Blade Runner, like the remaster called Final Cut. Okay. They said, we need Harrison to come back. And Harry was too busy. Like, I think they planned to get him between two movies he was shooting. And they got Joanna Cassidy back to do certain scenes. The scene was when she was blasted by Harry's blaster, and she goes through all those plate glass windows. And you can painfully see that it's the stunt person. They just couldn't hide it because of all the glass. The face is going to show up.
Yeah.
So digitally they put her in there in a Blu-ray master. I think it's even in 4K master when they did it back then, which is a long time ago. But now they said, well, look, we need there's a scene where he's going to Abu Hassan, who's got the fake snakes and stuff like that. And he says, Abu Hassan, you got snake scales, whatever it is. And the lip sync is completely out with the audio track. Completely out.
Oh, wow.
And they couldn't sync it up with the way his mouth was moving. So the ADR was obviously wrong. And Harry couldn't do it.
Oops.
And then Ridley said, well, we've got around the corner here, Ben Ford. Why don't we just get Ben down here? Ben looked like a 40-year-old Harrison.
There you go.
So he may not sound like him, but he can lip sync to it. So that's why they got him down here. And for Aussie audiences listening tonight, I'll tell you who Ben looks like. He looks like Dink Johnson. Dick Johnson's one of our famous touring car drivers, V8 supercars out here. So basically your Daytona racers, that's our guy. But he looks like Ben Ford.
So this guy's named Dick Johnson?
Dick Johnson, yeah. Dick Johnson is probably one of the most famous racing car drivers in Australia. I'll have to put some shots up later. When you see him, and he's got that big tooth grin that, you know, a cheesy scoundrel would have, you know, but he's kind of like, hey, you know.
Yeah.
And he's one of the leading guys when it comes to famous race, actually my stepdad's involved in too, called the James Hardy 1000 or the Bathurst race. This is the most prestigious V8 supercar race in Australia. It's been running for about 40 years. It's huge.
Mm.
And I've driven it. I've driven through it. It's one of the most dangerous necks of racetrack you'll ever go through because it goes up through the mountains and down as well. If you like your Nissan, well, there's even a thing called the Nissan Skylight where you go up through there and you can't actually see. It's a crest. You can't see the road and you go like this. And you're going at speeds of about, well, it's in kilometres for us, so to be about 80, 90 kilometres out, which is about miles. You're doing about 150, 160 miles an hour.
Wow. Yeah.
Through S-bends. And then there's what we call the Conrad Straight, and that's where we basically always said, that's like that when you kick in the afterburner or hit the hyperdrive. And just guns it down there. And you can
remember. That sounds fun.
Remember those? A lot of those cars are like literally stuck to the ground because they're so low. The suspension's like dragging on the ground, you know? So it feels like you are part of the earth when you're the G forces on your car. You're like, so we always are like, hey, it's like the Falcon, man. But it was a Ford Falcon.
There you go, close enough.
Yeah, so it always comes back to Star Wars. But
yes, it does.
It does, it does. And I think that's what did it for me. Now, just talking quickly to the books, that's the second part where I learned more about, I think, you know, the character himself. I never really got the Brian Daley books back in the old days. I'd seen them. I'd read part of, I think, the second book, which is Han Solo's Revenge. But the ones I did get were the ones that came out years later by Bantam, which were called the A.C. Crispin trilogy. So Paradise Now.
Oh, I love those books.
The Hutt Gambit and Rebel Dawn, I think the other one was called.
Yeah.
And they were great.
Something like that.
A.C. Crispin nailed it. I mean, that's...
Those are some of my favorite Legends books.
There's so much humor in those books. But I always had people telling me, like, you know, and this was back in the late 90s when I read those series. Mm. They're great, but the Brian Daley ones are even better. And I said, why is that? Because all they were allowed to use was a Falcon, Chewie, and Han, and they had to come up with their own characters, their own universes. And Brian Daley had to run with it. And I think that's what makes it so interesting because they're really new adventures. They're really completely out of the realm of what we're used to. But as talking about tonight, we're doing Han Solo at Star's End on the back of this. It is one of the ones that really throws you out there to see what they were doing between the movies. In this case, this was pretty much what they were doing up to Star Wars.
Yeah. This book came out in 1979, April.
So, it's, I mean, literally hot on the heels of getting ready for Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
Within 12 months. You know, it's huge.
Yeah. I mean, that was with that book and Splinter of the Mind's Eye. I mean, that's some of the first EU books we got.
Oh, totally. Splinter, yeah. For me, too, is just as quintessential. Alan Dean Foster, who Star Trek writer, original writer of his own stuff as well, and also the writer of the Alien trilogy of paperbacks as well. So he did Alien, Aliens, and Alien 3. I think he just walked away from them after that. But they are some of the best adaptations to book from film I've ever read. He also did Chronicles of Riddick, believe it or not. The one with Vin Diesel, you know.
Right.
And it's the only Vin Diesel movies I can stand, to be perfectly honest with you folks out there. The Fast and the Boring. The Boring and the Furious, I don't really get into these days. I got a car. It's called Fast. And now it's going to spin around a mountain. It's going to come over. It's going to do a flip. And then it's going to land on top of a truck. And I got to steal the car. You know, and that's basically what those movies are. The first movie is actually a good movie. You know, because they kept it as grounded as they could. And it was about, really about the races, what they used to do, you know, and wherever it is, set, LA, whatever it is. And I think that's what's gold, because we were all going through that at the time. We're all getting hotted up Nissans, Mazdas, Toyota Supras.
Oh, yeah. I used to play Gran Turismo 24/7.
Oh, same, dude. PS1? Yes, yes. I still remember we'd finish work every day and we'd go home. I had a mate of mine called Shane. He won't mind me pulling this story up. It's good. Every day, he'd be finishing at 2 o'clock. He was a tradie. I was just a dock worker out on the Brisbane River, unloading trucks and stuff. Anyway, we'd go back to his place and be like, he'd already be playing on the PS1. And I'd always come in, sit down, and I'm a button smasher. I literally, if I get frustrated, I'm tapping everything. And I always won the races. He's like, how the hell did you do that? I've been playing that for 3 hours. How the hell did you do that? And then, he eventually kicked my ass over a couple of months later. We were just, I learned to play properly. And then the luck wasn't there because I wasn't button smashing. I know, right? But it was years later, Shane would go through and get, he would get other games, like the fighting games. I was playing one of the Tekkens with him. And he would be sitting there trying to do all the moves. I'm going to do a fireball. I'm going to spin kick and I'm going to do all this. And in comes me, who knows nothing about Tekken. And I go, righto, let's do it. And I just kept punching. And I got right through, knocked them all out. And he's like, nice. How the hell did you do that? How'd you do that?
Yeah.
I said, it's just luck. Like, it's literally not even knowing. But we grew up in that time where all those, like the Falcon, we were modifying cars. So we were going through V8 supercars at the time. I had a V8 Ford Fairmont, they were called out here, which were kind of like big Lincoln, I suppose you guys have over there. And we dropped it. So it went from Australian suspension is very high. Because our roads aren't as good as you guys have in the States. So the modifications were for us, we dropped it right down. So it was only about a Coke can off the ground, so in height.
Wow.
We low profiled the tires, so it was, you know, racing tires. But then I left the car stock so that if people pulled up next to you, they would think, hey, that's just another car. It's like an old man's car. It was maroon. It was beautiful inside, leather and velour trim, all that sort of stuff. It, you know, for all case and purposes, it looked very American car because it's a very long car, which is very rare in Australia. Shane had a General Motors car, which we call Holden out here. That's the company out here, but it is General Motors. Yeah. And he had what they call a Commodore. So it was basically, Commodore was the Pontiac of Australia, basically. Huge car.
Okay.
And V8 supercharged. Yeah. He put everything into this car. But you knew what it was because it had the kit around it too. So it had the spoiler, the fins, the front guard, and all that sort of stuff. And you heard it because when he turned on the car, you hear this boom, whop, boom, 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 boom. You know, it was getting up on the dial on the taco, and you see it going from 3,000 to 8, 3,000 to 8 all the time. Whereas mine was just a stock standard V8, but fairly well-tuned one, so it got up to 3,000, it spiked as well. And we used to have these kids, and bless his soul, he's passed on since now, so to Travis out there, to his family and friends, we say, still to this day, we miss him. But this guy was, I'm going to say it nicely, a bit of a douchebag when it came to cars. He always thought he could outrace people, and that's what's so funny about the guy. When you meet him, he's a lovely guy, but he goes, I got a Nissan Pulsar, or what we call Nissan Pulsar. Little hatchback, about the size of a Corolla, tiny car. And he would sit next to Shane and go, I'm gonna beat you. Shane's like, it's not even a race. Like, my car's a supercharged, like, basically a performance car. And this guy, get him off the mark, and Shane would just, like, casually put down the accelerator and then, boom.
And this here's how you can find the Phantom from Down Under on the World Wide Web. You can catch Adam O'Brien, the Phantom from Down Under, at The Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can also catch him on the Lethal Mullet podcast on Phantom Podcast Network. You can also catch him on Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast on Phantom Podcast Network. You can also catch him at The Mullet Guild on the Phantom Podcast Network at fbnet.podbean.com. Be sure to check out all the listings there and subscribe for the great shows also at fantatracks.com. It's all your Star Wars news in a single file. Well, that's all we have time for here tonight on the Fanta from Down Under. And we'll catch you next time, same place, same channel, and of course, with more Star Wars news in a single file from FanthaTracks.com's Australian edition. That's right, we'll catch you next time. So, until then, may the Force be with you, and enjoy your Star Wars fandom. We'll see you next time.
Warning, no Tauntauns were harmed in the filming and recording of this podcast.
Coming up next on Phantha Tracks Radio, it's Cannon Fodder.